success of our university. I will ask them to stand and be recognized as a group. We are honored to be joined by the President of the University of North Carolina and four former chancellors: Erskine Bowles, Bill Aycock, Christopher Fordham, Paul Hardin, and Bill McCoy. These are great leaders for North Carolina. Members of our Board of Trustees are here for meetings today and tomorrow. Let me ask Chair Roger Perry to stand with all of our trustees, Vice Chair Carol Mason, Secretary Rusty Carter, Dr. Philip Clay, John Ellison, Paul Fulton, Austin Gardner, Barbara Hyde, Nelson Schwab, Sally Shuping Russell, Don Stallings, Bob Winston, and Eve Carson. And joining them are the four most recent trustee chairs. Together with Nelson Schwab, they represent a great legacy of leadership at Carolina. Tim Burnett, Richard Stick Williams, Ann Cates, and Richard Stevens. Will you all stand? Ask the Chancellor's Cabinet and all of the academic deans. This is a great team. Let me ask them to stand, and I'm also asked to join with them Faculty Chair Joseph Templeton, Employee Forum Chair Ernie Patterson, and Chapel Hill Mayor Kevin Floyd. Will all of you stand and be recognized? On this occasion, we're happy to celebrate the winners of the C. Knox Massey Award for Distinguished Service. We recognize these individuals in the spring, but it's, I think, appropriate to bring them in the fall for this occasion for a more public recognition. And let me ask them to stand and be recognized as a group. They are Terry Bowers, electronics technician; Carolyn Cannon, associate dean and academic advising director; Sue Clapper, now retired senior associate undergraduate admissions director; Michael O'Malley, associate director of the Leinberger Comprehensive Cancer Center; Kurt Pelland, director of the Ground Services Department; and Rhonda Thompson, housekeeper in Winston Residence Hall. Please stand and let's thank them for their great service. Let me say first a word about the North Carolina General Assembly's budget, which may be the best budget in this university's history. I think the major reason for this success is President Erskine Bowles, his dynamic leadership. Erskine, on behalf of all of us and the people of North Carolina, thank you. When Erskine came almost 2 years ago, he said he wanted to be our partner. He has been that and more. He is a leader. He is a leader that we are proud to follow. The General Assembly made a stunning series of allocations, including meaningful pay raises for faculty, a well-deserved increase for our staff, and the creation of the University Cancer Research Fund that will help put Chapel Hill on the map as one of the world's preeminent institutions leading cancer research. Other highlights included significant recurring fundings to support excellence in the School of Law, capital construction for genomics and dentistry, and new faculty positions for the Nutrition Institute at the Kannapolis Research Campus. Governor Easley and our legislative leaders, especially Senate President Pro Tem Mark Basnight and House Speaker Joe Hackney, demonstrated a keen recognition of the role that the UNC system is playing in North Carolina's future success. We are deeply grateful. Before getting to the substance of today's remarks, please allow me some personal comments. People often ask if I dread making speeches, especially this big one. And I have a confession. This is one of the most enjoyable aspects of my job. Remember, I'm a performing artist by profession. Now, performing can be a humbling experience. Early in my career, I was about to give the final concert of a small Midwestern town, it was in Kansas actually, for the community concert series. And just before I was to go on stage, I heard the series board chair appeal to the audience to give generously to the series so that next year, she said, we can afford better artists. The lesson I learned as a concert artist was always to get off the stage before the applause stopped. Nothing is more embarrassing than being stuck out there with no applause. The second lesson was always to be conservative with encores. Always leave them wanting more, my teacher said. These lessons stuck, and I think they apply as much to me today as they did on the concert stage. Son of announcing today that I will end my tenure as chancellor at this great university on June 30th, 2008. Let me hasten to add that this is not a retirement. After a year's research leave, I shall return to this campus with the most exalted title that this university can confer on an individual, professor. Announcement today to give the Board of Trustees time to begin a search for my successor with the hope that this individual can assume his or her responsibilities by July the 1st. I will be fully engaged as your chancellor in the year ahead. I know that what I've told our fourth-year students will be equally true for me, that this year will pass in a flash, and before we know it, we will be in Keenan Stadium in graduation gowns. I do not intend to waste a minute. This university is on an incredible roll. It's a great tribute to our students, faculty, staff, trustees, alumni, parents, and friends, as well as President Bowles and the leaders of the UNC system and North Carolina. There's a lot to celebrate in Chapel Hill because we are making progress on virtually every priority that we have set for ourselves. This year's first-year class is again the most academically qualified in Carolina's history. We received over 20,000 applications, up from 16,000 a decade ago. The average SAT score for this year's first-year class was 1,302. 10 years ago, it was 1,220. This year, 77% of our newest students graduated in the top 10% of their high school class. A decade ago, it was 66%. This year's class is also the most diverse in our history. Carolina leads the nation in access and affordability. Through several key policy decisions, Carolina has now become more affordable to a larger number of North Carolinians than ever before. Kiplinger's Personal Finance magazine has concluded 6 consecutive times that we are the best academic value in public higher education in America. Universities and entire states are following our lead when they model programs after the Carolina Covenant. And this May we will graduate our first class of Carolina Covenant scholars. We also set the bar high for graduation rates, a critical measure of undergraduate quality. Our goal is to match the 6-year rates for Berkeley, UCLA, and Michigan by 2010. Last year, they were 87%. They were 87%, while we were at 84%. It is too early to report progress on this front. On the 4-year rate, even though our last year's results exceeded those of those same peers, we set a target of 75% by 2010. I'm pleased to report some success. Since last year, we have improved the 4-year graduation rate from 71% to 73%. For the first time in several years, the General Assembly included additional funding for tuition remissions to help us recruit and retain outstanding graduate students, who constitute nearly 40% of our students. They are the faculty's partners in teaching and research and make invaluable contributions to undergraduate education. With regard to the faculty, we have improved how we pay, recruit, and retain our faculty because they have been and are our number one priority. Our goal is to take average faculty salaries up to the 80th percentile of our peers. We are roughly now at the 50th percentile, and we may reach the 80th percentile as early as next year with another solid legislative season and a modest increase in campus-based tuition. State appropriations helped us slash the gap between current salaries and the 80th percentile from about $21 million last year to $11 million this year for all tenure and tenure track faculty. This is real progress. More competitive salaries are helping recruitment and retention. Last year, we retained 72% of the faculty who received outside offers to whom we made counteroffers. That was our best showing in 5 years. We were at 52% in 2006 and 40% in 2003. We received almost $1 million from the Recruitment and Retention Fund created by the legislature at President Bowles' request. Those dollars helped attract 9 nationally known scholars and keep 6 of our strongest faculty who received outside offers. Most importantly, as salaries become more competitive, fewer faculty will even be tempted by outside offers. This is the healthier culture that we seek. This year, faculty again demonstrated remarkable creativity in the advancement of new knowledge. The most critical problems of our society require all the resources of a great research university in ethics and values, the creative arts, as well as science and technology. For example, cancer research is not just a medical or a public health problem, nor is the study of the environment. This is where Carolina excels, where the low stone walls of our campus become a metaphor for our ability to work together to solve big problems. For our science faculty, the principal metric of success is sponsored research. Total grants and contracts grew by 2.9% in 2007 to over $610 million, more than double where we were a decade ago. These gains gains came, even as funding from the National Institutes of Health began to shrink after its budget doubled in the 1990s. Our strategy of investing in big ideas, pulling together our strongest programs across the campus, has worked. This approach has paid big dividends in genomics, in advanced material science and nanotechnology. It has also worked in medieval and early modern studies, where we just received a major grant from the Andrew W. Mellon Foundation. The Carolina First campaign, the most successful fundraising effort in university history, ends in 3 months well over the $2 billion goal. We exceeded that goal in February when we recorded the largest single pledge in UNC history, the $50 million commitment to the School of Public Health by Dennis and Joan Gillings. Our campaign total does not include the magnificent $100 million gift to the John Motley Moorhead Foundation from the Gordon and Mary Kane Foundation, nearly doubling the Moorhead endowment. This morning, we announce an anonymous $5 million gift to benefit the Honors Program through five new endowed professors to recognize Peter Brower and William Harrison, alumni who have served Carolina with great distinction. And Peter Brower is in this audience today, and I want to ask him to stand and be recognized. Where is he? There he is. With that gift, we have now exceeded our goal of 200 endowed professorships by about five. But we're not finished. We are heading toward the campaign's finish line with a special additional drive for faculty support, increasing that goal by an additional $100 million to $500 million for faculty support. For students, our donors have established 544 undergraduate scholarships and 188 graduate fellowships. Our endowment has surpassed $2 billion, over twice what it was 7.5 years ago, a result of gifts and successful endowment management. These private funds are the fuel that is transforming this university, going from greatness to preeminence, to be the leading public university. Our massive building program is adding 6 million square feet to the main campus. This program is grounded in core values of architectural quality and sustainability. The 2000 higher education bonds brought $515 million for new buildings and renovations, and we more than kept our promise to triple the investment made by North Carolina taxpayers. We have completed now 80% of those 49 bond projects and expect to finish in January 2009 within 2 months of our original projection, on time and on budget. The total $2.1 billion building program, including projects funded by gifts, research grants, and our own revenues, is giving the campus community the physical space in which to excel in ways that we have never been able before. This campus is being transformed. One of America's most beautiful campuses is becoming even more beautiful. Carolina has a long and cherished tradition of service to North Carolina, but we can and must do more. Vice Chancellor Mike Smith has formed the Engagement Task Force, the Engagement Council, to help set our course, leading a campus dialogue on engaged scholarship. Golden Leaf Foundation has committed at least $10 million over the next 5 years to support the faculty's work in rural communities across North Carolina. Our ongoing work on this campus ties in naturally with the University of North Carolina Tomorrow Commission, created by the Board of Governors and led by President Bowles. This commission is holding forums across the state to learn directly about community needs and how the UNC system can respond. We are continuing our own Carolina Connects initiative, launched in 2004, to listen to the people, to understand their needs, and to demonstrate what this university, with its statewide mission, is doing or ought to be doing to serve them. One thing that we have learned is that we need to do a much better job of telling our story, of how this university touches people's lives in all 100 counties of North Carolina, in the issues that matter most to them, their health, the education of their children, and the economic prosperity of their region. Carolina North will be critical to our ability to help the 21st century economy for North Carolina. Finally, after years of study and conversation, we are ready to begin. Later this afternoon, we expect the Board of Trustees to act on our plan for Carolina North. With their approval, we will begin the process of formal submission to the town of Chapel Hill. We have identified our first building for Carolina North, an innovation center, where fledgling companies, using intellectual capital drawn from faculty research, can take their first steps toward full viability. This partnership with a local developer, with a private developer, not a local developer, with new companies and the new companies it creates, will pump new tax dollars into the community and support the local economy. Later, these companies will create products and procedures that improve human health and the welfare of us all. We have listened to the community and sought input from a broad spectrum over the past year. The Leadership Advisory Committee, chaired by former law dean and Chapel Hill Mayor Ken Brown, developed principles that have guided a series of draft concept plans presented to the community in meetings since last March. Carolina North's Executive Director Jack Evans and his colleagues have done an excellent job with this phase of work. The campus community and our neighbors have provided invaluable feedback, making the final concept blueprint better. The question of whether Carolina North will happen has been replaced by questions about how this mixed-use environment will function and how this university will consider the concerns and views of neighbors, neighborhoods, and the larger community. At Carolina North, we will create strategic private sector partnerships that will enable this university to be a more powerful force in this state's economy. One issue closely related to Carolina North is our plan for the Horace Williams Airport, which is where we will start the first phase of the new campus. Some see closing the airport as a lack of full support for the AHEC program. AHEC is the absolute anchor of this university's service to North Carolina, and the last thing we would ever do, is diminish this service to communities, to patients and health professionals across the state. I firmly believe that we can both build Carolina North and strengthen AHEC. In the near term, medical air operations, the transportation arm of AHEC, will remain at Horace Williams until the Innovation Center is ready for occupancy. In the midterm, MedAir will move to the Raleigh-Durham Airport. We will work closely with AHEC, the physicians and staff, to make this transition go smoothly and to provide them the support that they need. In the long term, the university believes that a general aviation airport is important to the future of AHEC, the university itself, and to the economic success of Orange County. We pledge to work earnestly with local, state, and federal agencies to help create a general aviation authority for a new airport. UNC has taken some critical steps toward becoming a great global university, bringing the world to North Carolina and taking North Carolina to the world. On University Day, October the 12th, we will dedicate the FedEx Global Education Center and convene for the first time the Global Leadership Circle, a task force of visionary alumni and friends to help us develop a strategic vision for global engagement. Last year, I went to China, where we co-sponsored a forum on healthcare reform with Peking University. Next semester, we will host our Chinese colleagues at a similar conference focusing on health issues in the United States. We are a world power in global health. Building on our faculty's historic strengths, we have launched the Institute for Global Health and Infectious Diseases, led by Dr. Mike Cohen. Through this institute, we will become even more effective in our research in infectious diseases, water quality and nutrition, work that is already improving and saving lives here and around the globe. Ultimately, achieving our global objectives may be one of the most important things that we do for North Carolina. This state's competition is not South Carolina. It is not Georgia. It is Singapore. It is China, India. UNC must be a presence in the world so that North Carolina can compete in the world. It is as simple as that. Every part of the university is positioned for the kind of distinction that we expect at Carolina. We have come a long way, and I'm pleased to report that the state of the university is excellent. However, I am not going to use my last year as chancellor for an extended victory lap. We have some real challenges to face. I want to do all I can this year to address the issues that I believe will dominate my successor's tenure. There are four major challenges. First, enrollment growth. Enrollment growth will be, without question, the single most critical issue facing my successor. The UNC system expects to absorb approximately 80,000 additional students by 2017. Chapel Hill is already growing, and we will grow more to respond to the needs of an expanding and more diverse population seeking access to higher education in North Carolina. This is a huge challenge, and we must meet it. We cannot freeze frame this university or embed it in amber. Rather, we must continue to evolve and change to serve the public that created us and sustains us. This fall, for the first time in our history, enrollment exceeded 28,000 students, about 4,000 more than we had when I arrived 7 years ago. Under our current trustee-approved plan from several years ago, enrollment will increase to nearly 30,000 students by 2015. The question is, given what we know about the state's growth, will this be enough? And if not, how will this university accommodate more? The limiting factors for growth are resources and quality. Resources for faculty and support staff, the necessary infrastructure of classrooms, offices, parking, and transportation that allows the faculty to be a presence on the campus, and the amenities for student life that support the personal and social development of our students. Quality is the other metric of control. We must ensure that admission standards for undergraduates remain highly selective, and we must continue to push for higher graduation rates, which itself will create more capacity. But we must do nothing to degrade the quality of the entering class or of a Carolina degree. At the same time, we must increase support for graduate students, ensuring that Chapel Hill will continue to attract the finest young scholars to our graduate and professional programs. Indeed, it will be critical that we maintain the roughly 60-40 ratio of undergraduate to graduate and professional student population. This is crucial to the academic ecology of a research university. I do not minimize the challenges that growth brings. While we should never compromise on quality, we and our successors must never send the message to the people who own this university that the door to opportunity has been closed. This fall, we will undertake a comprehensive update of our campus master plan, beginning with a space needs assessment for various degrees of growth, to incorporate recent master planning by the UNC Healthcare System and the School of Medicine, and also to take into account the possible programmatic uses of all of our outlying lands, including Carolina North and Mason Farm. The second most urgent challenge facing the university is the intensifying competition for research support. In my installation address in 2000, I described the investment that we had just made in 18 faculty positions to support a new genomics initiative. That dramatic investment speaks for itself. 7 years later, UNC is a world leader in genomics and genetics research. Later, we made a similar investment in advanced material science and nanotechnology. Last year, I announced a goal of securing $1 billion in external research funding by 2015. It remains the audacious goal I described, quote, to take UNC to another level of excellence and prominence as a research university. To reach this goal, we must make some fundamental course adjustments. UNC has benefited enormously from the run-up of the NIH, but now we face a new federal reality. The decline in real dollars at NIH and a new federal escalator in the physical sciences, energy, and technology areas under legislation signed last month by President Bush. This initiative received initial congressional funding this year and will ultimately double funding in these areas. One of the principal architects of this new federal thrust is our own Chancellor's Eminent Professor Dan Reed, who sits on the President's Council of Advisors on Science and Technology and chairs the Policy Board for the National Energy Research Scientific Computing Center. To be successful in this new environment, we must make new strategic investments. We must increase our research capability in the physical sciences and build even more bridges between the biomedical and physical sciences. We must define new technical areas and approaches that will create a competitive advantage for Carolina. Simply put, we must devise a new strategy for innovation that builds on existing strengths, but also includes recruiting and supporting new faculty who will foster multidisciplinary collaborations and lead new initiatives, both large and small. I have asked Vice Chancellor Tony Waldrop to chair a faculty task force to develop a short list of big ideas for new investments. The objective is to position Carolina to be successful in this new environment. This group will identify 3 to 5 broad thematic areas in which UNC will invest to increase its competitive position, taking into account existing strengths as well as new opportunities. One of these broad themes has been given to us by the North Carolina General Assembly: cancer research. The third challenge will be to identify the resources for new investments. Let me be perfectly candid about what this means. Today, we could not make the investment in genomics that we did 7 years ago because we do not have the resources available centrally. We have prided ourselves on placing our assets in a distributed manner, as close to the ground as possible. This has been an effective strategy for individual principal investigators to be successful in an environment of steadily increasing funding. It has maximized individual entrepreneurship. With this strategy of decentralized deployment and control, we have created internationally competitive departments, schools, centers, and institutes. However, there is a huge downside to this strategy. When the rules of the game suddenly change, and they have suddenly changed, we have little ability to steer the ship to change its course. Realistically, we cannot expect the state to provide all the new resources that we will need for major new initiatives to the degree that it has done for cancer. We must find these resources internally. In a budget of over $2 billion, finding sufficient new investment capital should not be an insurmountable challenge, but it will challenge our traditional ways of doing business. Over the coming year, I shall ask the provost to develop with the deans a satisfactory method of capturing funds sufficient to allow some significant new investments in selected priority areas. The fourth challenge is the essential resource of people, especially tenured and tenure-stream faculty, the people who do the research and provide the service to the state. They are the key to everything, and this is the supreme challenge. According to a white paper by Bob Lohman, Associate Vice Chancellor for Research, and I'm going to give you some numbers here, and I'll go slowly, but these are important numbers. Nearly 41% of our faculty are 55 years of age or older. Nationally, half of all faculty leave the workforce by age 66, and 90% will have stopped working by age 70. I should note parenthetically that more and more faculty remain highly productive well into their 70s, a trend that I find myself applauding more and more. It's amazing how my own views about this have changed in the last few weeks. Based on national trends, we expect at least 500 tenured faculty members to retire in the next decade. That is more than double the rate of the past several years. Besides those 500 new hires required by retirements, we will have to replace 1,300 faculty who will resign or not be reappointed, and find another 225 faculty to cover current enrollment growth, the current enrollment growth projection to 2015. That suggests, according to Lohman, quote, the need to recruit and hire approximately 2,000 faculty members over the next 8 years, or about 250 faculty per year. And that number does not include potential new faculty hires supported by cancer research, nor an accelerated growth projection. To put those numbers in perspective, we now have nearly 3,300 full-time and part-time faculty. Hiring 2,000 faculty in 8 years is equivalent to replacing about 5 of every 8 faculty members. The overwhelming prospect of replacing that many faculty is even more daunting when we remember that every other college and university in America will be facing the same problems of an aging faculty, if not the same growth in enrollment. This has huge implications. And I suggest that we cannot approach this issue of faculty replenishment in the old mode of doing business, where departments and programs essentially clone the appointments made in the 1970s. In some cases, we may choose to replace a retiring specialist in the organ music of J.S. Bach with another Bach specialist, but I do not believe that even that position, which is probably mine, by the way, to be made without serious examination of larger alternatives. Some of our major competitors are recruiting whole faculty teams, not just individuals. We have seen that in their raids on our best research groups. Clearly, they have an institutional strategic purpose in these recruitments. That's the nature of the game today, and not only in big science. And that is how we would build expertise in faculty with global or environmental perspectives, to name just two examples. Carolina has many individual strengths and an interdisciplinary culture that position us well to play in this game. Now we need to take it, this game, to the next level. This is a challenge and an opportunity to position UNC to realize its goal of being the leading public university, one of national preeminence. There are a few advantages to having come late to Carolina with first-hand experience of other university cultures. This university is truly unique. It is a place that is open and free, that celebrates excellence wherever it occurs, that honors teaching and embraces selflessly a tradition of public service. We are a university with a healthy ego, but an innate modesty and lack of pretension. We take literally, sometimes too literally, I think, the motto of the state of North Carolina, esse quam videre, to be rather than to seem. This is a place that for many years I held in high esteem from afar, and I shall never forget the first time that Susan and I walked on these brick paths 8 years ago. Knowing that we were going to have this high privilege of leading this great institution, I got goosebumps then and we get them still today. This is a place that we've come to love. This is a place we've come to love with every fiber of our being. And I understand how it captures our students, who fall in love with it on the first day. Or as World War II veteran O.G. Grubb wrote so beautifully in words that are inscribed in our new alumni memorial, "Chapel Hill is in my blood, just as much as the sand and pebbles from the rocks used to be in my shoes." I believe that this university has the strength of character and the maturity to embark on bold and audacious new initiatives, the ones I have described, and not lose or endanger that wonderful culture of openness, freedom, civility, and collegiality. We love this place, but we must not let our love of it lead us to complacency or self-satisfaction. Once again, Carolina is called to lead change, to reinvent itself for the 21st century, holding fast to the incredible ethos of our bedrock values. Over the course of the next year, I look forward to working with the trustees, the provost, the deans, faculty, in addressing these critical issues that will, in my opinion, determine Carolina's future. my pledge to you is to bring the same level of passion, energy, and commitment in my last year that I did in my first 7 as your chancellor. And let us choose a course so that 100 years from now, historians will agree that Carolina's third century was her best, a true renaissance of the human spirit. Thank you.